Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Trouble Country by Luke Short, narrated by Cody Roberts. 1. Sam Dana reined up his bay on the foothill bench above the Bar D spread that he hadn't seen for more than a year. It could have been the savage, early afternoon sun battering the old frame house. For in his absence, the big old cottonwoods that once shaded it had been cut down. The small fence that surrounded the tiny front yard now guarded a brown, paper-littered weed patch. Scowling, Sam found the old trail and put his bay down it, still regarding the place. He was a tall man wearing worn range clothes. His lean, flat-cheeked and beard-stubbled face was so weather-browned it made his blue eyes seem almost gray under black tufted eyebrows. A couple of hundred yards beyond the big house was the spacious log cabin where his half-brother, Walt, 5 years older than Sam, and his wife, Rita, lived. There were two saddled horses at its small tie rail under a big pine tree, and even as he watched, he saw two men bolt out the front door and run for the two horses. Even at this distance, he could see that neither of them could be Walt. They mounted hurriedly, but instead of heading for the road to Garrison that lay between Walt's and the bunkhouse, they headed for the outlet of the trail he was descending, which ended just short of the horse corral. The pair of them were waiting on the flats at the end of the trail, both dismounted. One, a squat, bulky man of perhaps 45, held a carbine cradled in an elbow. The other, taller and younger, looked sullen and tough. When Sam reined up, facing them, the older man said,
"You're lost, stranger. You're on deeded land, so you're trespassing. Go back the way you came."
"Who are you?" Sam asked quietly. "I don't remember you."
"I'm Wally Shores, and I don't remember you either."
He took two steps to his right and studied the brand on Sam's horse, then said,
"Well, I don't remember that brand either. So back up the trail you go."
"Is Walt around?" Sam asked.
"Around Garrison somewhere."
Sam inclined his head in the direction of the horse corral.
"Duke's in there. Walt always rode him, so he's here. Now, point that rifle toward the ground and stand away."
"Just who do you figure to be, mister?"
"Half owner of the land you're standing on," Sam said. "You're both in my way. Move!"
Sam touched his spurs to his horse, and the two men parted to let Sam ride between them, headed for the far corrals.
"What's wrong here?" he wondered.
Two new hard-nosed hands who didn't like strangers. In the old days, any visitor was welcome, even if he was only riding the grub line. These two, after he had asserted his half-ownership, didn't even greet him or acknowledge they'd heard of him, only let him pass between them. When he reined in at the corral and secured his bay alongside the other two horses, he tramped past the two hands, together now and watching him, and went to the office side door of the big house, knocked and stepped inside. The room, Sam remembered, was a catch-all for all the worn-out or unwanted furniture of Bar D. The shabby roll-top desk, the chairs that almost leaked stuffing, and the leather sofa that was boot and spur-scarred. The last held the stretched-out form, under a tattered Indian blanket, of Walt Dana, just rousing from sleep. When he sat up, brushed the blanket aside, he recognized Sam, smiled, and heaved his thick bulk erect, saying,
"Well, well, the fiddle foot shows up again."
He was a paunchy bear of a man, and, hand held out, he crossed the room and shook hands with Sam.
"Big brother, you're some bigger," Sam said.
Walt ran a meaty hand through thinning, sand-colored hair, then slapped his ample belly with the palm of his other hand.
"Yeah, that happens to some of us,"
he said with smug resignation. He moved over to the desk's swivel chair and swung it around to face the easy chair by the door. Sam sat down in the easy chair, took off his hat, laid it on the floor beside it, and looked carefully at his half-brother, not much liking what he saw. Before he could speak, Walt said,
"You're a little late for Mom and Dad's funeral, Sam. I know you couldn't have made it, but you never even answered my letter."
"I never got it. Where'd you send it?"
"San Dimas, Mexico."
Sam sighed.
"New Mexico, Walt, not Mexico. Then how'd you know about the accident?"
"I was out on a prospect, went into town for supplies. Ran into a man I knew, and he told me he read about the train wreck and saw the death list in the papers."
He paused. "You must have gone through her letters, enough to know where I was."
"She burned your letters. Remember? She was your mother, not mine. Pa had a poor notion of what you were doing, except prospecting."
"How's Rita?"
"She's living in town. The trees around the house caught a blight, and we had to cut them down. With no shade, the house got hotter than the hinges of hell, and she couldn't take it any longer."
Sam only nodded, then asked, "Who's new on the crew? I sure never saw the two that stopped me before."
"The whole crew is new to you. I reckon the old bunch didn't hanker working for a younger man. When Paul was killed, they quit."
Everything Walt had said so far held a certain reasonableness, but Sam was determined to persist. He said then,
"Well, I saw those two that stopped me come out of your place. How come?"
"When we moved in here, I told the boys to use it. There's only six of them, counting the cook. It's closer to me and the barn and corrals. I eat with them, so I see it's taken care of."
Sam picked up his hat and rose.
"Well, the place looks like hell, Walt. From the bench trail, I saw you had down wire in the horse pasture. I know you've got a new crew, but nobody's riding line. I know these last months have been hard. I know..."
Walt cut in sharply.
"You don't know. While you've been out looking for the lost Dutchman with your mining school brains, I've been running Bar D. Your half and mine."
"I'm grateful, Walt."
Walt heaved his big body out of his chair and glowered at Sam.
"Grateful? You're so damn grateful you'll pull stakes in a few days and be gone for another year or two. I run the spread, boss the crew, and then split with you all the profits I make. It's not good enough, Sam."
He moved closer now, and his anger was plain on his broad, flushed face.
"Since you won't work here and don't give a damn about this place, will you sell half your interest to me? That's as fair as I can put it."
Sam thought a moment, then said, "Well, I may want to come back here someday, Walt."
"Not with me here, you won't. Either you sell out to me, or I sell out to you."
"What's the whole outfit worth?"
Sam asked quietly.
"Ask Wilford at the bank. He's got all the figures and papers."
"I'll do that. I have to go in this afternoon to look up some maps for a couple of days. I'll see him."
"You're welcome to put up right here. We've got room and half the house is yours."
"I reckon not," Sam said. "Town will save me time."
2. Outside, Sam moved over to his bay, alone now at the corral. Looking over at Walt's house, he saw that the two horses he had tied his necks to were now tied under the big pine in front of Walt's house. Picking up the road to Garrison, he reviewed his welcome home. To begin with, the spread wasn't being worked. It was being guarded. Why? From any strange rider like himself, obviously. and he couldn't blame Walt for resenting the fact that, as half-owner, he ran Bar D but had to split all profits with the absentee owner of the other half. His ultimatum to sell him his half or buy Walt's half made a kind of sense, too. But Walt was lazy and incompetent, even as a young man, sure to fail at anything he tried. There was something wrong here, and he had to find out exactly what. Garrison, so named because it had once been a temporary tent town army post, was now the county seat of Campbell County. From its wide main street, flanked with false front, frame and brick buildings, Sam could see the towering Bradbury Mountains to the west, which he had been traveling through the past 3 days. He passed the brick courthouse at the edge of town, joined the busy Saturday mid-afternoon wagon traffic, passed the two-story garrison house, and put in at the feed stable a block beyond. There he left his bay, and took his blanket roll and left it at the hotel, where he signed for a room. A foot on the boardwalk, he headed upstreet, turned into a side street, then angled across it and headed for a one-story frame building. It had a window on either side of a half-glass door whose upper half bore, in discreet white lettering, the legend, Cyrus F. Allen, and below this, Attorney at Law. Sam opened the door into the familiar waiting room, saw that the office door in the rear wall was open. He called,
"I can lick any judge in that office."
There was a pause, and then a shout of laughter came from the office.
"You always could, you damned bully."
They met in the middle of the waiting room to shake hands. Tall, lean Sam and short, pear-shaped and bespectacled Cy, whose thinning curly hair was the color of peach fuzz.
"Get my letter of congratulations?" Sam asked.
"I did, and thank you. Before I could answer it, the train wreck happened. I'm truly miserably sorry about that, Sam. They were my friends. It was a hell of a way for them to die."
He gestured with his head.
"Well, let's go back in my office before someone comes in."
After waving Sam into the spacious office, whose walls were lined with book-laden shelves, he closed the door and gestured to the leather-covered easy chair facing one side of the desk. Sam took off his hat and seated himself. Cy slid into his own chair behind the flat-topped, paper-littered desk.
"I lost your letter. I tried to get your address from Walt so I could answer it, but he didn't know it, or claimed he didn't."
He leaned back in his chair.
"Now, catch me up on you."
"Well, I finally struck it, Cy. You'll never guess what."
"Gold? Silver? Or both?"
"Coal. What looks like a mountain of it."
He went on to tell of his prospect, the last drifting, and finally his approach to Rocky Mountain Central Railroad. They sent in crews to verify what he'd claimed, and found it better than anyone expected. Sam refused to sell and settled for an enormous finder's fee and lease with tonnage royalties. He refused a good job offer. He was not hankering for a desk job. The railroad had already started a spur line to the field. When he finished, Cy said, laughing with pleasure,
"I knew something like this would happen. You're too damn stubborn for it not to."
"You're the only one I've told, Cy. The word'll get out, but let someone else tell you. Can you be a county judge and still be my case field lawyer?"
"Well, there's nothing against it, and I accept with pleasure."
Sam reached out and they shook hands on it. Then Sam said,
"Well, that's only part of why I was anxious to see you. The other is, what's happened to Walt and Bar D?"
"If you hadn't brought that up, I intended to,"
Cy said grimly.
"Why do you ask?"
Sam described his homecoming, starting with his being stopped by the hard cases of the new crew, and ending with Walt's ultimatum. Sell out to me or buy me out. What's happened? Cy didn't even take time to reflect. To begin with, the old crew didn't quit. They were fired by Walt. He brought in the roughs. The first ones he brought in got into so much trouble they couldn't buy a drink in any saloon except Albie's. The worst. But why the rough crew on our place? Who were we fighting?
Nobody. Everybody was fighting you, because you were stealing their beef, driving them over the mountains and selling to a crooked Indian agent with a forged bill of sale.
What about the sheriff?
Hell, your dad got him elected. Cable isn't going after Walt. He has a debt to pay off to the Danas. Mind you, this is saloon and card table talk. I know nothing firsthand, but I think the talk is true.
Sam was silent for a few moments, pondering this. He said at last, Cy, I'm not going to hang around here trying to reform Walt. It's too late.
If you do stay, you'll be dead in a couple of months,
Cy said quietly. You mean Walt would kill me?
No. He wouldn't have to. You two would quarrel and Walt would badmouth you to the crew. They'd get the drift and set up a bushwhack. Both Danas have a bad name now. The shooting would be blamed on the man Walt's stolen cows from. Since you're half owner of Bar D, you presumably knew what was going on and approved. That'll be the story, but you'll be dead.
Again, Sam reflected, not liking the obvious which he had not put into words. So I sell out to Walt and drift.
You said you don't want to stay. So sell your half to Walt, but not for what it's worth. Say for half its appraised value. I'll find out what that is at the bank.
Sam scowled. Why?
Same reason. You won't be killed if the price is cheap and you clear out so you're not in Walt's way.
I've never run from anything, Sam said gruffly, then added, especially from that slob. Cy frowned and clasped his pudgy white hands on the desktop.
With this coal find as you described it, you won't be short for money up to the day you die. Then why not duck out at a sacrifice you can afford?
It's the principle of the thing, Sam growled.
Principles can get you killed sometimes, and this is one of those times.
Cy grinned, then,
what I'm saying is, I want you to come to my funeral, but I don't want to go to yours this soon.
As Sam walked a couple of blocks to the courthouse, he turned over in his mind the advice Cy Allen had given him. While it made Cy's kind of sense, it somehow angered him and gave him a vague feeling of shame even thinking about it. The image of a scared dog, running away with his tail between his legs, came to his mind as he climbed the courthouse steps and went inside. There was an office on each side of the short corridor that emerged on a long cross corridor which ran the length of the building. Sam turned left and then headed for the corner room on his right, which he remembered was the office of the county treasurer, so marked by a sign, gilt letters on black background, that thrust at a right angle into the corridor over an open doorway. It was a small room with a high counter on the right. From the counter rose a ceiling-high, chastely ornate metal grill anchored to the ceiling. It had two customer openings in it, and Sam thought, protect the money, like any bank, and walked to the nearest window. Through the grill, he saw a young woman rise from behind a paper-strewn, flat-top desk by the open vault door and approach his window. She halted, and Sam regarded her swiftly. She could have been in her mid-20s. Her hair was ash blonde, her eyes so dark a brown they seemed black. Her wide mouth had a faint lift at the corners, a beginning smile of polite welcome.
My name's Sam Dana, Sam began. I'm half owner of...
The Bardee, the young woman said. I trailed you a few grades in school. My name is Sisty Cable.
Sheriff Morton Cable's girl. I remember you. A long-legged girl with blonde pigtails.
He looked at her carefully now and saw a full-bodied young woman wearing a white shirtwaist and black full skirt. Her pleasant, wide-mouthed face was faintly freckled, and her dark brown eyes under piled-up tawny hair regarded him with a curiosity equal to his own. Sam grinned and said,
"Well, there have been some changes made."
She flushed slightly, gave a low laugh, and said,
"Well, girls do grow up, just like boys."
Sam smiled.
"How's your dad? I'm going to stop by and see him when I get through here."
"He'll be out of town for a couple of days. Some sort of trouble over in Pleasant Valley. What was it you wanted, Sam?"
"A look at your tax records to see what Bar D is appraised at."
"That's odd. Your brother with two of his men was in about 15 minutes ago asking for a look at the same thing."
"Not so odd. One of us is going to sell out to the other. Likely me."
"Who is your lawyer? Cy Allen, Howard Olson, or Peter O'Hara?"
"Cy Allen, of course."
Sisty shrugged.
"Why not sell? You're hardly ever here."
She turned, went over to her desk, picked up a heavy record book, and brought it back to the counter window. She pointed to the back of the room on Sam's side.
"There's a table and chair back there in case you hadn't noticed."
Sam nodded and reached for the record book when Sisty put a restraining hand on the big volume.
"Ever looked at one of these, Sam?"
When he shook his head in negation, she said,
"Don't believe what you read about property evaluations. They're way, way too low. That's because two of the three commissioners are ranchers. They don't believe in high taxes, so they order the land appraised at about a quarter of what it's worth, or even less. It doesn't even approximate the true market value, so don't be guided by it."
"Well, that's good to know, and thank you."
Then he asked with open curiosity, "How did a woman get elected treasurer?"
"Heavens, I'm not the treasurer. I'm a hired deputy. Mr. Balcom is the elected treasurer. He's old and mostly sick and out of the office. I'm just a hired hand."
"But you do the work," Sam said.
"The work he taught me how to do."
"Good girl."
Sam picked up the record book and took it over to the table under the window, pulled out the chair and sat down. He had no trouble finding the pages listing Bar D, Charles P. Dana, owner, because Sisty had marked the page with a folded piece of paper, undoubtedly for Walt earlier. Sam learned that two sections of grazing land and two residences with auxiliary buildings had an appraised value of $3,000. Sam smiled at this absurdity, but he realized that it worked in his favor in dealing with Walt. He rose, closed the file book, and headed for the counter window just as a man left it whom he hadn't even heard enter. Sisty saw him and came up to the window as he moved the volume toward her.
"Ridiculous, isn't it?"
she added.
"Well, if Bar D is an example, it's a book of fairy tales."
Sisty laughed softly.
"And, like fairy tales, nobody believes them."
Then a certain soberness came to her face.
"The bank has loaned money to your father. I've heard Pa say so. You'd get a fair, quick appraisal from Mr. Wilford, wouldn't you?"
"That's where I'm headed. Thanks for the help, Sisty. And I'll be seeing you."
Out in the hall, Sam saw that while it was nearly closing time, all the offices were open, and the county clerk's office was crowded. He remembered then that these same commissioners who had ordered low property tax appraisals had also ordered a working Saturday for county employees in order to accommodate the one-day-in-town-a-week ranch people. On the boardwalk outside, Sam saw the buckboards and wagons heading out of town, trying to make it home to supper before dark. At Garrison House, he took his blanket roll to his front ground floor room. The noise from the bar at the far end of the corridor reached as far as his room. As he stripped off his shirt and washed his upper body, he reflected on what a strange day this had been. Except for Sisty Cable, it was like coming from sunlight into semi-darkness. Caution said, "Watch your step. It's not like it used to be." Clean shirt on, he strapped on his gun belt, put on his Stetson, then headed down the corridor for the noisy bar room. Halting just inside the crowded room, he saw that the long bar on his left was jammed too deep, and all the chairs of the gambling tables, except for a lone poker game, were occupied by drinking men. Seeing a man at the bar put down his glass and turn to leave, Sam moved into the slot he vacated. One of the 8 bartenders, alert to the empty glass before Sam, moved over and said, "What was it, friend?"
"Not mine," Sam said. "I want a labeled whiskey and water."
He got his drink, tasted it, nodded to the bartender, and paid. Afterward, he picked up his drink and, turning to face the room, put his elbows on the bar and observed the crowd. He was aware now of a man standing at a table where others were seated. He waved and gestured with a "come over" sign, and Sam suddenly realized that it was Walt signaling to him. Taking his drink with him, he moved past the tables and he saw Walt speak to the seated punchers at his table. They rose and were leaving as Sam reached the table.
"Brought your own," Walt observed. "Sit down. We got a lot to chew over in private."
His heavy face was flushed, and Sam guessed he had come straight here from the courthouse. Walt poured himself a drink from the bottle in front of him and sampled it. Sam said dryly,
"In private, like here."
"There's nothing more private than a crowd. That's what the pickpockets say."
Sam smiled wryly. "All right, let's talk private."
"About what?" "You selling me your half of Bar D."
Sam only nodded, and Walt went on.
"I got the county's appraisal of Bar D this afternoon. Know what it is?"
There came an added racket in the room as several men at the biggest card table slid their chairs back and rose and scattered. When the din diminished, Sam said,
"Yes, I know what it is. $3,000.
Walt nodded.
"Half of that is $1,500. That's what I'll pay for your half of Bar D."
"You said to me, buy or sell," Sam said slowly. "What if I decide to buy? Still $1,500 for your half?"
"Times 20, Walt said flatly. "The place is worth $60,000. If you can dig up $30,000 cash, it's yours."
"Why the difference when you sell?"
"Because I damned well earned the difference,"
Walt said angrily.
"I told you, while you were batting around with the prospector's pick, I worked the place, and damned hard. There should be a difference."
"You're right," Sam said, nodding. "Pay me $1,500, and I'll sign over my half to you."
The flush of anger in Walt's face gave way to a look of incredulity.
"I don't believe you.
I'll have Cy draw up the papers."
Walt smiled and said,
"At last you're looking at my side of it."
A man approached their table and halted. Sam recognized him only after Walt said,
"Hi, Les. How you been?"
Uninvited, Les Beecham pulled out a chair and sat down. He was Sam's age and height, leaned to a tough gauntness. A full, fawn-colored mustache drooped at the corners of his wide mouth, and green eyes above a thin, high-bridged nose were cold, without friendliness. He thumbed his hat back on his forehead, then folded his hands on the table, looking.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?